Thanks for listening to the Suzy Larson Life podcast, available thanks to support from listeners like you. It's only just a matter of welcome to Suzy Larson Live. Always so honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. So I've got a few questions for you. Just want you to ponder with me, if you would. What are we to do with the desires of our hearts? Some say we're supposed to crucify them. Others say we'll follow them. What are you supposed to do with the desires that seem good? And how about those ones that don't seem so good, those unwanted longings? Do you shove them into the basement of your soul? Do you admit them? What are you supposed to do? What does the Bible say? How does God feel about our desires? And how do we discern if our longings are from Him or from the enemy? Dr. A.J. Swoboda joins me today to talk about his new book, The Gift of Thorns, Jesus, the Flesh, and the War for Our Wants. And you know this, if you've been listening to me for many, many years, I've been in radio, I read a lot of books. And this is one, when the show's over, I'm taking it with me. When I go to Florida, I'm reading it cover to cover. Every word, it's just rich, it's wise, it's beautiful. I strongly, highly recommend it. We've got 5 copies to give away today. You can text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. Got a quick announcement before we hear from Dr. Swoboda. If you are walking through a season of loneliness, and from what we hear, it's epidemic right now, we want to encourage you. Our very own morning show host, Carmen LaBerge, recorded some short audio texts, much like I did with the Good, remember the Good campaign? This one's on loneliness, and we'll send those texts right to your phone. You get 2 or 3 a week for the next handful of weeks. If you need some regular encouragement over these next few weeks, just text the word lonely to the same number, 877-933-2484. Now, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Dr. A.J. Swoboda is an assistant professor of Bible theology and world Christianity at Bushnell University in Eugene, Oregon. He leads a Doctor of Ministry cohort on the Holy Spirit and leadership at Fuller Theological Seminary. He's the author or editor of numerous books, including the one we're talking about today, The Gift of Thorns. He speaks regularly at conferences, church camps, and retreats. He's also has served as an executive director of the Seminary Stewardship of the Seminary Stewardship Alliance. My goodness, is there more than one way to botch your bio? Sorry about that, Doc. Welcome back to the show.
Suzy, it's so good to hear you again.
You too, sir. And you know, when you say it's good to see you, it is a little prophetic because people don't know, but our engineers are working behind the scenes to put our show on YouTube, which means I have to shower every day because we're going to have video. So you and I are going to be able to see each other on Zoom as we do a radio show, but then people on YouTube will be able to watch it too. So good to hear your voice today, sir.
Yeah, it's a delight to be with you. And thanks so much for your kind words and for hosting a conversation about this.
Absolutely. And I told you off the air, I think we need a few shows because to go through this content because it's so rich and I want to take my time. So Lord willing, let's do that. But before we dig into the content, you know this, you've been on plenty of times. Every day I ask the same question and it's this. What's the Lord been talking to you about just in your times with Him these days? What's He impressing upon your heart?
I've been reading a good deal recently in my Bible. I've been reading about the importance of confession and the role of confession in the health of a follower of Jesus. In particular, there's this passage in the book of James where James says that when we confess to one another, that we will be healed. He doesn't say we'll be forgiven, we'll be healed. And I'm learning that confession not only helps me access God's forgiveness endlessly, it literally heals my body, it heals my mind, my soul, and that I need some place to talk about my brokenness. So I would say confession has been a very, very important thing for me recently.
Interesting, because I've been thinking about that same thing. Confess your sins to the Lord and He forgives you. Confess your sins to one another and you're healed. And it just goes to show you, we can't be transformed. We can't mature or grow outside of a true and deep, authentic community. You know, we really need some of these people that we don't pretend with, that we're honest with, and that we go to the cross together with. So I love that. So good.
Yes, yes.
Well, you're a busy guy. So how did the desire, the topic desire kind of spring up within you to the point where you thought, I've got to make some time to write a book on this?
Yeah, well, if it weren't for the fact that I was a professor and had four to five college students in my office every day, bringing unwanted desires to the conversation. What do they do with, sexual desires and vocational desires and good desires? If it weren't for that, I may not have written this book. But largely, this book is drawn out of the fact that most Christians that I know have been handed an understanding of formation that is basically a form of behavioral modification, kind of a performative Christianity, that life is change your behavior and the rest will be well. And we never, ever allow the hands of the great physician to touch the deepest desires of our heart, which ultimately leaves us with a kind of cosmetic transformation. We're not really transformed if our inner desires are not transformed. So I think it's largely birthed out of that. But I have some stories in my own life that certainly have brought to the fore the need to write a book about human desire and what in the world God has to say about it.
Wow, so it's so rich, so good. Well, in the open of the book, you talk about the desires of two notable men, two very different men, Thomas Merton and Bertrand Russell. So talk about their stories and just their desires, really.
Yeah, well, it's I opened the book actually by quoting a very well-known philosopher by the name of William Irvine, who's a one of the few philosophers who's actually dared to write on the topic of desire. Most philosophers actually don't kind of deal with it. In fact, I came across one philosopher who called it a boring topic. Most philosophers don't really get into the topic of desire all that much. But there's one, William Irvine, who wrote a fabulous book called On Desire. And in the book, he narrates two people, the story of Thomas Merton, kind of famous Catholic priest and activist, who, when you look at his story, his turn to Jesus, his turn to the church, and his turn towards baptism arose out of this very weird set of odd just desires out of nowhere. He started longing for God. It wasn't that he read some book or started going to church. He just, out of the blue, he started wanting God and his desire to
After
become a
much
priest.
decadent living, right? I mean, he was very
Yeah,
much
he was
just following other
he
desires.
was not living the pure life as a
Yeah,
kid. No,
yeah.
he was a wild child. And so when he actually became a Christian, most of his friends and family really didn't even know what to do with him because he it was such an odd turn for somebody of his sake. And of course, we know the rest of his story is that he became, in many respects, somebody who made, at least articulated the Christian story to a new generation in the 60s and 70s of the counterculture world. So the other story, of course, is Bertrand Russell, the famous atheist philosopher, and sort of really saw himself as a vanguard of kind of the new atheist movement when it wasn't, back when it was actually kind of new. It's not new anymore, but he has a story that one day he loved his wife Alice, and one day he was on a bike ride, and just out of the blue, his desire went away, and he no longer loved his wife, and he came home. He had an affair, told his wife he was done, and their marriage was done. So Irvin, brilliantly in his book, he just illustrates the fact that both of these men, their stories were defined by the desires that they had. More importantly, their stories were defined by what they did with those desires. And I think that those two stories, it's a launching point for me. We all have desires that are good, and we all have really, really dangerous and harmful desires. The question is not if we're going to have them. The question is, what in the world do we do with them? And I think that sets up really the whole premise of the book, is that we desperately need God to mold and shape us into the right desires rather than the harmful, destructive ones.
Love this. You said desires can lead to character, faith, and service, but they can also lead to self-centeredness, narcissism, and infidelity. And at one point, I'm going to see if I can find it in my notes here. You talked about how dangerous and even harmful. I'm going to come back to it when I find the quote because I want to get to it. But just, 30,000 foot view here. When believers feel like all desires are evil, so they shove them in the basement of their soul, it's not good for them. They're one, not living a fulfilled life, but then also they're not identifying something that could derail them in a moment of weakness. So speak to maybe the Christian who really feels it's righteous just to crucify all desires.
Yeah, well, first of all, to do that, to say that all desires are bad, is to basically live a Christian vision that says Genesis 1 and 2 aren't in the Bible. And that is to say that humans in the Garden of Eden, and I have a whole chapter on human desire, humans in the Garden of Eden were created by God to have desires. They were created by God to long, to rule, to love, to name animals. Humans were made with desires. Desire is not bad. Desire is created by God. And, you know, more often than not, I talk in the book about how, because we tend to view the Bible through the lens of Genesis 3, we tend to overfocus on original sin, but we tend to ignore original desires. And so by virtue of that, we just assume all desire is bad. Paul does not tell us to crucify desire. He tells us to crucify the flesh.
That's right.
And because we assume those are the same thing, we assume that all desires need to be shut up and silenced and stifled. And that is not in any way, shape, or form what we are invited to do. We were given good desires. I have a desire to be a really good dad. Am I supposed to crucify that? Good night, I would hope not. The desire to want to be a present father who loves his awesome kid, that is a God-given desire. And so we are called to crucify the flesh, not crucify desire. But because we tend to have such a low view of desire, we lump them both together, and then we become Christians who walk around without desires. When in reality, to be desireless is actually quite inhumane. We were made to have desires. Desires are good.
Well, good. Here's another one. There are times when it's good to hope, with the psalmist, that God will give us the desires of our heart. But there are also times when the desires of our heart are distorted and untrustworthy and deathly to their end. The Christian calls to follow the one who made us out of his desire and gave us our own. I wonder, as I'm thinking about that and thinking about what you said, if people are afraid to hope, you know, like let's say there are good desires, but they shut those down too because they don't want to be disappointed. But then what's the result? They're living a hopeless life, you know? And yet there is a mystery to God's ways. And as you say plenty of times in the book, he doesn't always give us what we want. So what about that person who it's not maybe this rigid religious, I'm crucifying every desire, like it's noble to be, you know, unhappy or something, but they're a person who would love to hope, would love to dare to dream a little bit, but they're just terrified of disappointment. What do you say? How do they navigate that?
In Genesis, in Genesis 1 and 2, an interesting little Bible vignette, which is kind of interesting. One of the main differences between the humans and the animals in the creation story is that when God creates the animals, he creates them in pairs simultaneously. So they are made together at once. The male and the female together are made at the same time. Yet when God creates the humans, he does something very different. It's an alternative kind of creation method. God first creates the man. And only later, after he experiences loneliness, does he create the woman. And this is the only species in the garden story that experiences an unfulfilled desire. It is the only species that has to experience what one scholar called unfulfilled desire, or you could say it is the only species that is created to long for something. Those longings are God-given. We were made to long, not only for God, but for each other. We were made to long for fulfillment. We were made to long for God to reconcile us. We were made to long for the future. It is important that we have those longings, but we also need to recognize that often in having those longings, there will be a profound season of delay and waiting. And right now, we await Jesus' return, don't we? And as we await Jesus returning and coming back, God is doing something in us in the waiting. He's preparing us to be the kind of people who can handle his return. What's ironic in the Bible is often delay is usually when God's people commit their worst idolatry.
Yeah,
so totally it's true. When Moses is up on the mountain, too long that they make the golden calf. We often create idols in the waiting and in the delay, when in reality, the waiting and the delay is intended by God to actually shape us into the kind of people who can receive when God wants to give. You are made to hope, but you also need to recognize that hope that is deferred. It, at the end of the day, hope is preparing you for something you can receive, but it's probably not going to come at the exact moment you want it. Just like Adam didn't receive the woman the exact moment he wanted it. And in the midst of doing that, I think God is accomplishing some of his greatest purposes.
So good. As we go to break, I got to tell you, when I was walking through a long delay with this a health battle, and I told, you know, was lamenting to the Lord, hope deferred makes the heart sick, you know, but a promise fulfilled is a tree of life. And I just heard the little prompt to look it up. And I did a little word study, and hope deferred, in that case, the word deferred is a verb. It's an action word. It's when it's not that God is depriving us of hope because he's delaying his answer. It's that we are postponing hope because we're waiting for the answer. And you know, the message turns around completely on its head then. It's like our hearts can't live without hope. You can't defer or postpone hope while you wait. And I think that's hugely important. Our hearts can't live without hope. We're talking about desires, and we're going to talk about how we discern God's desire, human desire, Satan's desire. What do you do with unwanted desires? All of those things wrapped up in a great book called The Gift of Thorns, Jesus, the Flesh, and the War for Our Wants. Dr. A.J. Swoboda is my guest, and we will be back in a minute. This is Suzy Larson, host of Suzy Larson Live. I don't know about you, but I love consistent nourishment. I love to fast on occasion. There's a purpose in that. But if you go too long without eating on a regular basis because you're too busy, your body actually goes into crisis mode. Well, in the same way, your soul, your spirit, they need nourishment too. And that's why it's so important to be listening to scripture, listening to good teaching on a consistent basis throughout the day. That's why we're here. We love what we do, and we want to do it with you. If you listen on our on the radio, on the terrestrial signal, we encourage you, download our free Faith Radio app. That way, if you're traveling this season, you can take us with you wherever you go. You can catch the live shows or even the podcast after the fact. And we've made it easier than ever. All you have to do is text the word app to 877-933-2484 and then click the link. I hope you will walk with us on this journey. Greater things are yet to be done in and all around us because God, well, he's on the move. Hope you're having a fantastic day. Thanks for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live, talking to our friend Dr. A.J. Swoboda about his brand new book, just amazing. It's called The Gift of Thorns, Jesus, the Flesh, and the War for Our Wants. We're talking about desires, how to discern God's given desires, human desires, enemy longings, unwanted wants, you know, and what to do with them. And that, how A.J. is saying how important it is to acknowledge desires, not to ignore them. It's very damaging if you do so. And we'll unpack a little bit more as to why that is. Let's go to your title, The Gift of Thorns. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, well, I take a risk at the beginning of the book and develop the theme throughout that at the very beginning of the story of creation, when God creates and then the serpent comes in, deceives the woman and the man, that he says to the man, you know, there's consequences for sin. And then God speaks to the man and says, as a result of your sin, you will now work the ground. And it will, by the sweat of your brow, produce thorns and thistles for you. Now, I'm not the only one who's ever made this case, but the language there in the text, to me is, well, first of all, the Bible's inspired, and I think every word is inspired by God. And it says that the thorns are for you. There are many consequences for sin, for the man in particular. His work is going to become toilsome. It's going to become an existential crisis. He's not going to, as I say in the book, the man will now make his work his God. He will turn from the Lord of the harvest to the harvest itself. And in so doing, begins to experience the corruption of his own labor. But to me, when I read that phrase, that the land will produce thorns for you, thorns and thistles for you, it reads as though there's something in that that it's intentional, like it's for you. And, you know, of course, we all know this. Our bodies don't do what we want. The land doesn't do what we want. Our work doesn't do what we want. Our relationship doesn't do what we want. We don't get everything we want. And I suspect, and I'm not going to give the whole story away because the end is the most important part, but I suspect that there is in that truth, there in that moment, a lesson for us to learn. And that is that actually one of the greatest gifts God could give us in our own human depravity, now that we are fallen, is that God refuses to give us everything that we want, and that he has intentionally put us in an environment where we are frustrated. Because if we actually got everything we want, can you imagine how horrific our lives would be? So I make the case that actually us not being able to get everything we want is one of God's greatest gifts.
Wow.
And that, in fact, in the Bible, the idea of wrath, ironically, is less lightning and God, striking us with curses. Wrath is described by Paul, at least, as being given what we want and being given over to the things that we desire, the fleshly,
Wow.
sinful desires of our hearts. So I think, Susie, what I'm trying to say is the worst thing God could give us as sinful people is everything that we want.
You know, I
So,
have to refer to the great theologian Willy Wonka in this because when you think about that movie from all those years ago, I know there's a more a contemporary version, I haven't seen it, but I just remember when my kids watched Willy Wonka when they were young. You see the evidence of a spoiled child who gets everything they want, and the one who's had to struggle, he's the one with virtue. And, when you talk about don't spoil your kids or don't spoil your food, it's ruin. Don't ruin your food. And it would ruin us as much as we ruin our kids when we give into their every whim. But somehow we don't like that lesson and we don't always learn it,
Well, I mean, right now, I have a, by the way, shout out. One of my favorite podcasts is the Intentional Parents podcast. My friend Phil Comer and Brooke Moser do this beautiful podcast. One of the things I'm learning about parenting is that we live in kind of this moment where parents are feeling tempted to want to sort of bend to their child's every whim and want. Sociologists talk about how parents are less parents now and they're more parents. They want to be peers with their kids rather than be
Wow,
parents.
interesting.
And the result is that it really destroys a kid when they get everything they want. I mean, it is horrific for their well-being to only get yeses, because it sets in motion a kind of character that unless there's some intervention, doesn't stop. I mean, to the great Willy Wonka, as you say, to the great Willy Wonka, like Charlie is the one who can pass the Wonka test because he spent his childhood caring for his grandpa, and he spent his childhood having to struggle and suffer. There is so much virtue and giftedness in being in a world that causes consternation and pain.
Wow.
So I suggest that that is a gift from God. And it is played all the way out to the story of Jesus, but I'm not going to give it away. But it is played out in one of the most important, if not the most important, moments in the entire Bible, in the story of Jesus.
I was thinking of a portion of my story where the delay was 12, 13 years long, and I had a deep, deep, deep longing, and it wasn't coming. But when God finally did shift, things and moved us, we stepped into the next thing that he had for us as if we were always ready for it. And I can see now we weren't ready for it before. Longing isn't an indicator. Even gifting is not an indicator of your readiness. And he's a good father. And he I always say he makes us wait because he's making us ready,
If maybe your listeners have heard of this, but there's a phenomenon called sudden wealth syndrome, which is what happens when people get too much wealth too quickly. And that is, they usually murder people or walk through horrible divorces, or something horrible happens. Because when you receive a gift without having gone through the preparation to be able to receive it, it destroys you. I mean, it's actually the whole story of the book of Judges in the Bible. It's sudden wealth syndrome. Israel has now received the land, but they were not ready for it. And the land was too good for them. It was a land flowing with milk and honey, but they just did not have the character to receive it. And we see time and time again a cycle of destruction because of their inability to receive. There's this wonderful little sermon. I quote it in the book by Martin Luther. And what she talks about that moment when Jesus is in the boat and there's a storm with the disciples and the disciples turn back and Jesus is asleep in the back. And there's this beautiful little sermon that Martin Luther once gave about Jesus sleeping in the back. And he said, why is it that the God of the universe would sleep at that moment? Why, what would be the win in that? And Luther said that the win with Jesus sleeping in the boat, the win is that it caused and forced the disciples to have to cry out to him. Hmm. I think similar to kind of your own experience as you just shared, there are moments when it just feels like God's asleep. Like, God, what's up? Where are you? What are you doing? And those moments are intentional. That's not God making a mistake. I think it's similar to God, like Jesus sleeping. Those are moments. The delay is intended to arouse in us a deep desire for God. So rather than seeing those as bugs, those are features. God is giving us delay. He's giving us inconvenience as a means of arousing our hearts for him. He's brilliant.
Yeah. And the thing is, when it arouses this hunger and a thirst for God, many times we're going to God because we want the desire of our heart. But if you're a serious follower of Christ, you suddenly realize any gift from his hand pales compared to the treasure of knowing his heart. Suddenly you realize what I really need and what I really want is you, Lord. And when I get you, even before I get that thing, I am more than satisfied. Where we find ourselves satisfied in God in the most beautiful way. I cannot thank him enough for all the no's, all the not yet's, all the delays, because it's ignited a fire in me truly to run hard after him. And then really to maybe trust myself a little bit less with my desires and trust him more with them. What do you say?
Boy, oh boy. All of my heroes, Susie, all of my heroes, and that is people who have most shaped my love for God. When I read their biographies, when I read their journals, they are people who had major thorns in their side, who did not get what they wanted. C.S. Lewis lost his wife in their first year of marriage. Henry Nouwen had a struggle with his own sexual desires. Flannery O'Connor, one of my favorite writers, got lupus right when she got famous. All the people who most have shaped me that speak to my soul are people who showed me how to faithfully handle the thorn in their side. That is where we are made. As Paul says, I prayed that this thorn would be taken away, but God wouldn't take it away because it kept me from being conceited. The thorn in his side was a gift to him. It made him who he was. And if we don't have thorns, those moments, those deep existential longings, if we don't have them, we never grow up.
Right. We become and stay self-obsessed. You know, as we get ready to go to break, I work out on this Nordic Trek bike. It's like a Peloton bike, but I like it better. I'm just saying, just me. But anyway, it comes with this iFit program. So I was cycling in Australia today. It was quite lovely. And the trainer said something that hit me. He says, there's pain that hurts and there's pain that changes. We need to embrace the kind of pain that changes. I thought that's such a good word, but it still rails against our desire to have what we want when we want. But pain that changes, I think anybody who's just a serious follower of Christ who says, I'm in, where else am I going to go? So, you know, through the storms, through the trials, those are the people, as you just said, when they refer back to the most formative parts of their journey, it's the pain, it's the thorns, because somehow, somewhere, when you lean into the Lord in those places, the enemy does lose real estate. You know, he loses access in some ways because you get a little wiser to his schemes and you find something deeper in the Lord that you can't get from getting everything you want. Any thoughts before we go to break?
You should have written this book. I mean, you're hitting.
Oh, stop. Yeah.
No, I mean, you're hitting it on all sides here. And I wish it's hard actually to bring up this conversation, with Americans, because Americans, we have interpreted literally the American dream as getting everything you want. And so in a way, like this conversation about the cruciform, like Jesus-centered desires, it's the opposite of the American dream, which it when at the end of Paul's life, at the end of Peter's life, there's this little moment in John 21 when Jesus comes back to Peter and he says, you know, Peter, when you were young, you went where you wanted to go. But when you're older, you'll go where I want you to go. Someone else will clothe you and you will glorify God with your suffering. And that is the opposite of the American dream, which is we tend to think when we're young, we don't do what we want. But as we get older and closer to retirement, we get everything we want. And for Peter, it's not when you were young, you got what you wanted. But as you get older, you are more and more crucified with Christ. It's the opposite. And that's a violation of much of our cultural set of values.
Exactly. Wow. When we come back, I want you to talk about the story from Mark 5 that you write about in the book. I thought it was such an interesting angle. You look at three players, the demons, the townspeople, and the man who was restored. And interestingly, friends, as we look at the story from that, from the perspective of desires, it seems like the two bad guys got what they wanted when they asked Jesus for their desires. He acquiesced. But when the man who'd been healed and restored, he said no to him. Why does it seem at times like the evil prosper, like you read even in Psalm 37, you know, don't fret, don't rage. It only leads to, you know, harm. You delight in the Lord. You trust in Him. There's this massive contrast in Psalm 37 between the wicked and the righteous. And when we just rage because it seems like they're being treated better than we are, we've got a wrong view of God. So I want to look at this story from that perspective, talking to Dr. A.J. Swoboda. His book is The Gift of Thorns, Jesus, the Flesh, and the War for Our Wants. Such a beautiful book. It's a hardcover book packed with wisdom. We got 5 copies to give away today. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Susie Larson here. Excuse me, Susie Larson Live, talking to Dr. A.J. Swoboda about his amazing book, The Gift of Thorns, Jesus, the Flesh, and the War for Our Wants. It's all about desires. How do you discern what is a God-given desire? Maybe what's a human desire? What's an enemy-planted desire, right? And how do you, what do you do with those unwanted desires? Do you stuff them in the basement of your soul, pretend they don't exist? Do you act on them? You might, if you ignore them, I would say. We're going to dig into all of that in just a little bit here. But I loved your exploration of the story in Mark 5, where Jesus restores the demoniac. And you look at the desire of three players, the demons, the townspeople, and the man who was restored. Would you set up the story, AJ, and then kind of unpack it as you see it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fabulous, but extraordinarily frustrating story.
Yeah. Yeah.
for a number of reasons. So the story goes, Jesus crosses the Sea of Galilee, and he arrives on what is the Gentile side of the Sea of Galilee. So he gets off the boat, and there's this man traditionally called the demoniac who is possessed by a demon spirit, some sort of, you know, spiritual entity, and comes to Jesus. And of course, Jesus, as he often does in the Gospel of Mark, is a confrontation with the spirits of evil. He confronts the evil spirit and casts the spirit out and spirits out. And when he does, the spirits beg Jesus to not send them out of the region. So they don't want to go anywhere else. They just want to be kind of nearby. They don't want to be, you know, sent somewhere else. And so Jesus casts the demons out and throws them. These demons into a herd of pigs who incidentally run into the Sea of Galilee and die. And when they do, of course, naturally, the local townspeople are upset because their herd of pigs has now died. This demonic herd of pigs has now died. And they are mad and want Jesus to leave. And the demoniac who has been freed then says to Jesus, can I follow you and come on your ministry team and be a part of what you're up to? So when you look at that story, it's a really interesting story. What's most frustrating for me, as I've read that story for years, what's most frustrating is when you pay really close attention to who gets what they want, because the demons get what they want. He doesn't cast them out of the region. They get to stay around. The townspeople want him to leave, and he consents. He leaves. And the one person who doesn't get what he wants is the one who wants to follow Jesus. Now, I've read that story over and over and over again over the years, and it has just sat on my soul. Like, why? You would think, like, the one person who should get what they want is the one who wants to follow Jesus. Of course, the guy can follow Jesus, but Jesus is telling him, you need to follow him and go to your hometown and tell everybody what I've done for you. But the lesson of the story is, like, the one person who does not get their request is the one who wants to follow Jesus. So what do we do with that? As I read it, I think that the story is a small but important invitation to one of the deepest truths of Christian discipleship we can spend our lives meditating on. And that is that following Jesus is not a surefire way of getting everything we want. There was a, people like Sigmund Freud, you know, the famous psychologist, made the case years ago, 100 years ago, that Christianity was merely people projecting onto God their own desires, and that all God is just wish fulfillment. When a Christian worships God, they're just getting from God what they want, and they're projecting, and it's all about getting what they want. Well, tell that to the demoniac. Tell that to the people in the Bible who were sawed in half and torn in two for loving God. The story of the demoniac is actually the opposite of wish fulfillment. It is that when you follow Jesus, one of the first things that happens is your desire is wounded. And that is one of the signs, I think, we're following Jesus. Is when we're following Jesus appropriately, we come toe-to-toe with the fact that we're being confronted on some stuff. I think it's a pretty good sign that you're following yourself when you get everything you want.
Exactly. So good.
So the story is really about the fact that following Jesus is not a surefire way of getting everything you want. It's entering into God's desires and being willing to give up your own.
And ultimately to learn and believe that his desires for you are your best case scenario, even when
that's
that
exactly
means
right.
Death to flesh, right? I mean, what amazes me is that he is so good to grant us goodness in the land of the living, where we see he encourages us. You know, he could withhold so much from us. He didn't withhold his son, and yet he still, you know, he cares about our, you know, your son at his soccer game, or your daughter who's dealing with, you know, petty girlfriends or whatever. He cares about so many details and intervenes as we pray and call on him. He's better than we know. So when he does give us a no or a not yet, we've got to know there's as much love in those answers as there are in when he does answer us in the way we'd like, you know?
Yes, yes. Yeah, I mean, you know, as time goes on in all of our lives, I think we all begin to experience the reality that we know we are a complex set of emotions and desires. St. Augustine used to say that we are a gymnasium of desires. Hmm. There are some great ones inside of us and some really, really dark ones. I don't think it's possible for us. I mean, if somebody says you do you or follow your heart, my response is, well, which one? Because it changes about every 20 minutes.
Right.
what I want right now is not what I'm going to want in 1 hour. And if I just willy-nilly follow everything, good night, I'm in trouble. My wife and my son are going to pay a very heavy price tag if I just follow my heart. So here's the key, is that without having some sort of framework upon which to put our desires, if we don't have a framework, if we don't have like a set of truths that give shape to our desires, you do you and follow your heart is basically going to be hell for everybody else. Because they're just going to live at the whim of your every whim. We need, my friend Richard Beck calls it cruciform desire. We need desires that are shaped around the cross of Christ. Mm. And without that, good night. We are just going to day to day, every 20 minutes, just going to follow every little desire. And man, if we do that, Susie, I'm thankful to God that being a Christian means I don't have to follow my desires.
Yeah.
It's actually liberating because when you have to follow your desires, as our sort of modern culture seems to suggest, it's untenable.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful. I don't have to. And Jesus, the Spirit, frees me from needing to follow every desire. Thank God.
And if that isn't even also a testament of the risen Christ alive in us as culture spirals downward, and if you really truly follow Jesus, if you really, really do love him and follow him, and you maybe were a hardened criminal, what's amazing is your character starts to defy the gravity of the sin and of the culture. You become more humble, more winsome, more teachable. You become renewed day by day. That is a miraculous transformation that you can't attribute to bootstrap theology. I mean, truly, when the Spirit of God gets inside and starts working and you lean into that and embrace it, whatever it means, it's just a marvelous transformation that only God could do, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So good.
Yeah, there's this section in an article written by Dallas Willard, who any of your readers, I can't commend him enough. You read everything Dallas Willard ever wrote. He's a Christian philosopher who worked at USC, but his stuff is just so powerful. He had this little chapter that he wrote in a book called it was called Nietzsche versus Jesus Christ. And he took the story of Friedrich Nietzsche and he compared it to the story of Jesus. And he makes the case that one of the marks of kind of modern secular society is that we are told we can do anything we want to do, that all desires are now possible. And Willard argues that because of that, because now all the doors of desire have been opened to whatever we may want to do, that now the human heart no longer knows what to do because every desire is possible. We now don't know what to do. This is the college student who walks for an hour through the cereal aisle, not knowing which cereal to buy because they've got so many options. It's called choice paralysis, right? We just have so many options. And so Willard argues that we now live in a moment where we no longer know because there's so many options, we no longer know what to desire, that we now chase things that can awaken our desires. And he calls us, and this is, it's a little scandalous what he calls it, but I love it. He calls us a Viagra society. And it is a society that does anything to simply awaken desires because we have lost capacity to actually desire well. And I see that in students. I see that in my neighborhood. When every possibility is now open, the human heart shuts down. It doesn't know what to do with all the options.
Wow.
Humans need boundaries. That's why when God in the Garden of Eden says, you can eat from any tree in the garden but one, there is almost universal freedom, but there's still a boundary. And that boundary must be honored. And without the boundary, God, even there is still a no in the Garden of Eden. Humans, even in their sinless state, need a boundary.
We're going to pause here. When we come back, I want you to talk about what do we do with the base desires. When we were talking about the unwanted longings, what if, you know, someone's listening today going, I want to follow God, but if I'm honest, I mean, you actually tell a really interesting story about the Boston Marathon bombers and how they found them through their own the bombers' internet searches, you know, and then you go on to tell another story of just sort of a revealing of people who were using an escort service. Their names were hacked and, you know, and then suddenly people's private life was posted publicly. Like they're, you know, people deal with base desires. And as a Christian, you might be dealing with something like that and you don't know what to do with it and you're terrified of it. So I'd love to know, Dr. AJ, what would you say to that person who is maybe afraid of what's bubbling up inside of them? And then when we, as we wrap up the show, we're going to just wrap up and pray that God would lead us in the best way we should go. Talking to Dr. AJ Svoboda, his book, The Gift of Thorns. We'll be back in a minute. This is Susie Larson, host of Susie Larson Live. You know, solitude is one thing, loneliness another. We can enjoy rich times with God in solitude, yet we can be in a large crowd and feel all alone. It all depends on the season we're in and the perspective we embrace. Maybe, just maybe, you're walking through a season where nobody quite understands what you're walking through. Well, friend, you know what? Jesus knows. You're never alone. Even so, every one of us needs encouragement on this journey. We would love to encourage you today. If you need some texts of audio encouragement, we would love to send those to you. Text the word LONELY to 877-933-2484. 2484. Again, text the word LONELY to 877-933-2484. I want you to be reminded that you're not alone. He is with you. We're with you too. Connecting faith to life, Faith Radio. Thanks so much for tuning into Suzy Larson Live, talking to our friend Dr. A.J. Swoboda about his amazing, really brilliant book, so well thought, so well researched, The Gift of Thorns. He says, if the trusted hands of the great physician aren't permitted to touch our unseen desires and wants, then our salvation remains cosmetic and performative. By ignoring our desires, we run the risk of doing great harm to others and even greater harm to ourselves. I want you to talk about that. And I also wanted you, I just was feeling as you're talking, someone's listening today who's terrified of some base desires, maybe that they've even nurtured and fed in times past and they have a vulnerability towards now. What should they do?
Yeah, by base desires, I think let's define our terms. I think what you're asking, what I'll respond with is, if you love Jesus, it is likely that you have some desires in your heart that you know are not reflective of what God desires. And that is to say, we all have unwanted desires. We all have things that we wish we didn't want. You know, I'm 42 years old. I'm slowly beginning to do a swan dive into my midlife crisis. And as I do that, I am grieving the fact that at 42 years old, I still wrestle with the same desires I had in my heart when I was 16 and gave my life to Jesus. And I wish I could be on this program today and say that all of my flesh has just disappeared and gone away. And it hasn't. And it is a daily, constant, never-ending process of once again placing my flesh on the cross with Christ. We've all got him. We just don't often talk about him.
Yeah.
Really grown to appreciate a book by Jay Stringer called Unwanted, in which he talks about unwanted sexual desires. And he, in his fabulous book, he talks about how, when we look at our search history and the things that we look at on the computer, more than anything, that's a transcript of a lot of the things that we want. And often we don't even pay attention to what we want. We erase the search history before anything happens so that we don't have to deal with it. And one of the things he invites us to do, again, as a Christian therapist, is he invites us to actually pay attention to the things that we want. Where do those desires come from? Why do we long for those things? Where did that start? Because if we're not curious about that, if we don't actually give space for the Holy Spirit to speak into why we want what we want, then we'll just keep shoving it in the basement and it'll keep coming up and biting us if we don't pay attention to it. So what do we do with them? I would say three things. I would say, first of all, I would invite anybody who's listening to this to see that thing as God's invitation to you to cultivate the virtue of dependence. And that is that struggle, that desire that you have, may be actually the very place where Christ wants to most intimately meet you. As Stringer says in his book, searches for pornography are not always searches for lust. Often they are us looking for places to be loved. And his point is that often those desires really are secret longings for a dad that wasn't there, a mom that never said, I loved you. We need to recognize those places as places where God wants to come to us. I think the second thing I would say is that we do not do any justice to our own sanctification by beating ourselves up. Mm-hmm. Because in the end, by self-shaming, we end up just clothing ourselves and running into the trees as the man and the woman did. And usually when we start running from God, that's not a good trajectory. And I have always, in the Genesis 3 account, it's always struck me. Yes, God banishes them from the garden, but notice it was the humans who ran away first. And it was humans who run. When God says, where are you? He's actually giving them an opportunity to confess. But they run. And that's the human thing, is that we just beat ourselves up. And rather than beating ourselves up, what if we confessed and talked to God about it? And I think the third thing is that confession piece, ironically, that I brought up with you, which is at the beginning, which is that we all need some environment or relationship with a person or community that loves Jesus and is enamored with the Bible and God's Spirit as a safe environment to be able to name those desires. Because if we can't name them, they will just, they will turn sour and they will eat us up. And the stuff that remains in the dark has the most power. Yeah. We need a place to name that stuff. And the minute we can name it with a trusted person, be it a pastor or a brother or sister who loves Jesus, or even in some cases, a healthy Christian therapist who wants us to be healthy and well and love God, is that simply by naming it, its power is taken away. Its power is taken away.
You know, your answer was just everything I'd hoped it would be: gracious, humble, walking the same road together, all of us together. AJ, I was right about this. We're going to need several shows to unpack the content of this great book. Thank you for the time. Thank you for the thoughtfulness in this incredible work of art. We appreciate you so much.
Mm. Susie, you are the best interview in the world. Thank you for what you do. I mean that seriously. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you so much. Thank you, friend, for tuning in today. I know you found encouragement here today. The Gift of Thorns is the book. Dr. AJ Swoboda, my guest. We love and appreciate you. Keep on keeping on. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to Suzy Larson Live. Podcasts like mine are available because of your support. If it's important to you to hear things that encourage your faith, click the link in the show notes and give now.